This podcast takes you into the rarely discussed realm of the personal decisions leaders have taken that have influenced their business decisions and developed them into the leaders they are today. The refreshingly honest experiences of those who have been very successful provide an insight into the challenges they faced, the successes they achieved, and the people who influenced them along their journey. Here's our host, Mark Silvera.
Welcome to Business Made Personal. This podcast is brought to you by the insurance industry's leading education and events provider, ANZIF, via their Careers in Insurance initiative. I'm Mark Silvera. Today, I have Megan Duckworth with me. Megan comes from an insurance family and has over 15 years of industry experience working across various positions in claims, underwriting, e-business solutions, distribution, and even broking.
Thanks so much for having me. Very excited.
Let's get the basic stuff out the way. You're part of an insurance family. What was your childhood like growing up?
When you sort of look at our family history with insurance, during my childhood, I didn't know what an insurance agent did, let alone what insurance was for or how it helped people and business owners. So my childhood was pretty sheltered in that respect from an insurance perspective. But I had a very supportive family. So I'm one of four children. I call myself the middle child because I've got an older brother. I will say he's just a GP, just to annoy him when he listens to this. And then a younger brother and sister, James and Catherine, who are twins. So I do fall into that middle child category. We had an interesting childhood in that we spent a lot of time as a family. We did a lot of traveling together, lots of road trips, six of us jammed back into a car up to Queensland, which I'm sure mum and dad still have nightmares about today. But it was all about giving us the right experiences to build independence and resiliency within us as we were growing up. So we're really lucky. They instilled quite a lot of values in us early on, which really breathes through into the way that I parent and probably the way that I deal with people today. So things like empathy and kindness, honesty and integrity, which are really important values to have in any situation that you're dealing with. But I mean, one thing that sticks out is a lot of the sacrifices that mum and dad made during our time growing up. They worked damn hard to give us what we had, including really good education to set us up to succeed in whatever we chose to do or whatever path we decided to explore. And that's something that I'm hoping to pass down to my children.
So you mentioned that you're the middle child. So, you know, there's often belief that the middle child is the problem child. Was that you?
No. I was actually, because the twins came along when I was about 4 years old, I became the mini mum. So I had to help mum get nappies, warm up bottles, all those sorts of things. So if we go by those sorts of stories, then I clearly wasn't the problem child. I'm sure others would disagree.
So your family, it's really synonymous with the insurance industry. Your father, Tim Considine, heads up AUB Countrywide. Your sister, Catherine, is on the exec team at CBN, and your brother is involved in insurance in New Zealand. Did you feel pressure to follow in the family footsteps of your dad?
No, it's surprising because I think now there's a bit more talk around that family connection, mainly because, I mean, I personally hid it for a fair amount of time because I didn't want people to think that I just got my job because of who my dad was, or I just got to where I am because of the doors he may have opened for me. Because everything other than an introduction to the HR team at QBE all those 14, 15 years ago now, whilst I was at uni, that's as much as he's done to help me through my career. And that's the way I wanted it to be, because I want to be someone that can stand on my own two feet, that can do the job like I should be able to do it, not just because of who my dad is or who my brother and sister work for. But it is a great story to tell because, I mean, the three of us are now third generation insurance professionals, with my grandpa, dad's dad, starting the agency out in Croydon, Considine's Insurance, many, many years ago. But it's something that, yes, I hid for so long, but now I'm thoroughly proud to discuss it, because it is quite unusual for that to happen without it sort of being in a succession planning. We are all in very different fields. We all do very different roles. And it was really exciting just recently going to the Steadfast Conference in Perth. And James, Catherine and myself were all there in different capacities for different employers. And it was so great for me to see them in doing their job in capacity that they're doing it and absolutely killing what they're doing. They're doing a fantastic job.
It was great. And I did see the post on LinkedIn with the photo of the three of you. I thought it was awesome. I want to talk a little bit about your background. So you started as a QB trainee in 2007, and as you said, about 14, 15 years ago. You then found your way into co-founding your own business, Mitty Insurance, and it's now Safety Culture Care. How easy was it establishing your own business?
Quick answer is it wasn't. It wasn't an easy thing to transition into. I've never started an underwriting agency before, let alone run a business where we were having to pay staff. We had responsibilities, both in terms of regulatory responsibilities and capacity responsibilities. So it was a complete rocket ship from where I was into what I was doing. But I think back to when I first started, I made quite an effort regularly to create a career plan and update it as I went. And I was really lucky to have people around me willing and able to share their time to champion me both internally and externally within the business and outside, but also challenge me enough to think about, okay, what does 6 months look like? What does 5 years look like? What does 10 years look like? And that kind of helped form that path that I was going to take. And not to say that when I wrote my first business career plan back in the day that I had something like start an underwriting agency, that sort of came by surprise a little bit. But I think the skills and experiences that I've been able to pick up along the way have helped me land in that position to be able to be a person that could do it. And I was lucky again to just be working with someone like Dan Cummins, who we wrote the business plan together to create the underwriting agency, something that I wouldn't have been able to do by myself. But our shared skills, experiences, networks were able to come together to do that. But in terms of career plan, I mean, everyone sort of comes into a career thinking that the trajectory is just flatline up, which is great for some people and it works for some people. But for me, it was sort of climbing a jungle gym. I took a lot of sideward steps, downward steps to just ultimately bolster what my career looked like. And then obviously gave me the confidence to be able to go for roles over that time to get me to where I am today.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Did you have a vision of where you wanted to end up, or was it there's an opportunity on the left-hand side or the right-hand side of me and I'm going to go for it? What was your focus when you were looking at changing career, changing jobs?
The thing with changing jobs was more around my current role at the time wasn't challenging me enough to keep me engaged in what I was doing. So that's when I thought I'd sort of done my dash in that particular role and then started to look around to see what else was out there that could ultimately help me go to that next step. So I guess the one thing is if I'm not challenged, then I get bored. And that's never a good position to be in for any employer, let alone employee. So that's one thing that I continue to do with the staff that I have in my team is to make sure that they're continually challenged, because otherwise they're just doing a disservice to themselves. You want a purpose and a reason to get out of bed every morning.
I want to go back to your time at QBE. You did a stint in Europe, which interrupted your rowing coaching. What was it like to be in a different country and have to reestablish yourself?
That was probably one of the more challenging things that I've done. I'd only been at QBE for about 12 months by the time I decided to pack the bags and leave. And that first 12 months was a traineeship program at QBE Melbourne. I remember being so nervous speaking to my manager at the time, because it was at the point where they were going to offer me permanent employment with QBE in the team on the back of the traineeship. And I said, oh, look, I was going to say my husband. He wasn't my husband at the time. My boyfriend, which sounds weird to say, he was moving over to do a 6 month season of cricket over in Rawdon, which is just north of Leeds in the UK. So I sort of saw it as a perfect opportunity. It was something that I always wanted to do, work overseas. Thankfully, because QBE is a global company, they were able to put me in touch with the local branch in Leeds, and was just lucky enough that there was a position to work in their liability or their casualty, which they call over their claims team during that time. I learned a lot about myself during that time. I never realized how homesick I would actually get. So that was really difficult, particularly because Steve had his circle of friends from the cricket club, but there weren't a hell of a lot of other partners, other females that you could hang out with during the games. So towards the end of that stint, I think I ended up working there for about 7 months. And then we started doing a lot of traveling because when you're in Europe, why not? It's just a 2-hour flight to Spain or 2-hour flight to Rome. So that was a really fun time. But you're right, it did interrupt my rowing coaching. I knew rowing was never a career for me, but it was something that I did at school and continued on coaching at Genazzano for about 3 or 4 years after I'd finished school. It was a great sport to be a part of and one that I would recommend to a lot of kids growing up because the discipline that you're able to apply to yourself when you're in a sport like that, the alarm's going off at 4:15 of a morning, you're out in the dark before anyone wakes up and you're training and then heading off to school for however many hours and then back on the river in the afternoon. So that taught me a lot around work ethic and just, yeah, that discipline is something that I don't think I would have got had I not done the rowing and also the coaching after that.
You're making it sound very attractive.
I think Mum and Dad were really happy when I got my license.
Absolutely. I want to talk a little bit, and you alluded to it previously in terms of when you were setting up Metis Insurance and people that helped you along the way. I want to ask you a little bit about mentors. Have you had mentors over your career and what have they given you that has really been valuable?
I don't think I can actually pinpoint someone that's formally a mentor of mine. I've got many informal, and it's probably because they don't know that they're actually a mentor. But I'd probably say there's about 8 of them in total, and they all come from very different walks of life. A lot come from different industries, so outside of insurance. But I've been quite purposeful in making sure that none of them are close enough like family or friends, because there's sometimes not as much of an objective view on certain things. So I kind of wanted to have that sort of clear delineation between work and life, if that's one way to put it. But it's been really valuable because everyone has different skills. Everyone has different ways of doing things. And I've sort of just picked and chosen things from everyone that I've worked with to build up my own sort of toolkit around how I want to work, how I want to act, how I want to communicate and all those sorts of things. So it's certainly something that is really important. And I hope in time that I can be a mentor for someone else that's looking to start their insurance career like I did when I was 18, 19, many, many years ago. I think I've just kind of told everyone how old I am by breaking through that. Oops. But who knows, I might be an informal mentor to people that I don't know about, like how I treat others. So.
Yeah, 100%. I wanted to sort of expand on your comment there. So one of the things you said in insurance business, and I quote, you said, observing aspects of their styles, and you were talking about leaders, has helped me craft a distinctive skill set to be a well-rounded and versatile employee, colleague, and leader, end of quote. Of all of the things that you've come across and that you've got in your toolkit, what would you say is the most important skill that has helped you in your business?
I think communication is probably the key style that I've really tried to hone in on over the time, not even just through my career, but obviously growing up as well. It all comes down to, regardless of whether it's written or verbal communication, it's treating people the way you want to be treated. So you want to make sure that the communication styles is always being transparent and honest, because like we're in the business of trust. And if it can't be transparent and honest, then you're going to lose a hell of a lot of credibility in doing that. Interestingly, the communication styles that everyone has plays a really important part in all of that, because the way that I communicate is very different to a lot of my colleagues or even a lot of my staff. And I need to be really careful with how I deliver something, because it may not match or be received very well by that other person. So adapting to that to get the best outcome is always really important and just really helps with the engagement of whatever level or whatever job, title, or relationship that you're working with.
It's also a pretty tricky manoeuvre these days, right? So if I asked you about things like diversity and inclusion, you know, that's a whole brave new world, right? One that's been sadly lacking over many, many years. You mentioned your age in terms of when you founded the business. Being that sort of age and being a female in what's traditionally been a sort of male-dominated industry until fairly recently, were there challenges in there that were gender-based as opposed to what you'd normally come across, do you think?
I don't think so. I do think that we're still on a very steep learning curve with diversity and inclusion. We've all grown up in a world where it was the two words were never sort of sat next to each other. And I'm sort of learning on the run with a lot of it, particularly through my kids, because it's becoming so much of a discussion point at school and amongst all their friends around these sorts of things. And I think, like, for me personally, I need to catch up with a lot of the new world, because that's going to form part of the way that we're dealing with our staff, our colleagues, our suppliers, our customers, not only that, but just in our personal lives as well. So I think there's still a long way to go in that respect. But I think if we continue to be open to the communication and the discussions around it, then that's probably the best thing we can do at this stage without making too many assumptions, because that's going to make things difficult.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I think, you know, there are certain things now that I've had to learn to stop saying, which were a natural go-to for me. And I'm sure many people listening to this would be in a similar position. I think you're 100% right. We've got a long way to go, but the piece about the understanding is probably the critical factor. I want to also ask you, you set up a business when you had a young family. Just getting that whole, you're smiling, I can see you smiling. How difficult was that for you?
Very challenging. So we started the business case for the underwriting agency in October 2019. And obviously that process takes a little while. By the time we set up the joint venture the papers were signed in Feb 2020. We were only, unbeknownst to us at that time, we were only weeks away from hearing the dreaded word, COVID. So it was, and by that stage, my kids were grade 2 and 3-year-old kinder. So again, didn't even know what that world was going to look like by that stage. I still distinctively remember there was one morning where we called a meeting and we sort of went through a bit of a pros and cons when COVID was starting to become a bit of a thing and we were getting sent home from work and all those sorts of things. And we did the pros and cons. Pros, do we keep, well, the whole list was all about whether we keep pursuing setting up this underwriting agency, particularly not knowing what the global economy would look like, what impact it would have on small businesses, which our product was aimed towards. But at the end of the day, we pursued setting it up and eventually launching in October 2020. So when we talk about challenges and all those sorts of things, that's a pretty big one, particularly when I was sitting remote to my team. They're all based in Sydney. So fellow Melburnian, you understand what it was like during all that time and feeling so isolated. It was really difficult.
You're also doing homeschooling, I would imagine, at that time.
Yeah, I think I had a discussion with someone the other day where we spoke about this, and it was 174 days of homeschooling in total. And that's not including our weekends, obviously. So most days I dialed into meetings looking all focused and productive. But in reality, I was an absolute mess. Behind the facade, it was a completely different story. As soon as I hit that end meeting on a Zoom call, it was just sort of slumped in my chair and just being like, oh, how can I keep doing this? And look, there was a hell of a lot of people within our community that were well and truly in a more difficult position, but it was hard on everyone. I struggled mentally through it. Most days I was holding back tears. And I guess someone said this to me not that long ago. The hardest part of the 5-day lockdown was getting through that 11th week, particularly in other states, didn't quite understand the magnitude of that. Like, we went in with sort of a promise of you're going into a 5-day lockdown, we'll be out in the next, on the 6th day, but it just kept going and going and weeks were kept added to it. So every day you were sort of just hanging on and you're hoping that tomorrow would come, but it felt like it was non-existent and sort of every day was Groundhog Day. But looking back on it now, like my eldest, she's in grade 5 now and she's absolutely thriving. She knows how to use a computer better than anyone. So I guess there are some advantages of that homeschooling. But then my youngest, who was sort of in that foundational type age, she's struggling a little bit with her reading now. So there's going to be a little bit more work that we'll need to get through. But I guess if it doesn't kill you, it only makes you stronger and we're all the more resilient for it.
100%. But I can certainly underline the fact that it was a very, very challenging time. You mentioned that your mental health began suffering at that stage. What did you actually do to help you stay focused? Because you've got children at home. I don't know whether you were earning an income at that stage, but you've got work commitments. You've agreed to set up this new venture. What did you do to help yourself from a mental perspective?
It's funny because I still have days like that today. It's one of those things that you kind of just need to sit back and reflect a little bit, because it's not what happens or what you're going through. It's how you react to it. And certainly during those COVID years, how I was reacting to those situations was not great, because there was a hell of a lot of pressure during that time, not only from a work perspective, but just being locked down with your family in the confines of your house for 23 hours a day, not a second more, was really quite challenging, particularly whilst I was setting up the business. Steve was working from home. I kicked him out to the garage because it was the only space that we could sort of separate the two of us, particularly whilst we're on calls all the time. But we're living in a world now where we are just so connected to everything. Even we were joking earlier around not having Wi-Fi on a plane. And like, that is a dream now, to be disconnected for an hour, 2 hours or 3 hours. But it's also a bit of a fear to be like, oh, I'm not connected to the world. I don't know what's happening in the news. I don't know my family are safe for that period of time. So that connectedness is just elevating the pressures of everyday life for everyone. And I can only talk for myself here, but I'm always constantly feeling overwhelmed because I can't switch off, and it just heightens that pressure and it becomes more difficult to overcome. Sometimes these situations dent my confidence, which isn't great. So I need to do things that, when I start to find those triggers of feeling overwhelmed or feeling like I'm unfocused, then I need to do something about it. And Dan, my boss, keeps telling me, just do what's in your control. And that's a very hard thing for me when I'm a little bit of a control freak, just ask my husband. But he's right. Like, there's things that come up every day that aren't in my control, yet I'm feeling overwhelmed by it. And I just need to sort of switch off or just forget about it for a period of time, because we often become so consumed or overwhelmed by things that are outside of our control. And I guess the best way to recalibrate is just to turn off the laptop, turn off the phone, go for a walk, listen to some of your great podcasts whilst on a walk, because it's amazing what you can learn about people through all of those. And then my last piece of advice on that is, I'm very much a list person. So even today, my emails are out of control. But when I sort of think about that, what's in my control, then I start to write a list and start to prioritize. And there's nothing more satisfying than having a list and putting a big cross through that task, because you know it's done.
In fact, that's a great segue to the next thing, because, and I'm going to quote you again, an insurance business interview. And you said, rejoining the workforce after spending time as a stay-at-home mum was challenging after losing a lot of confidence in my abilities. End of quote. A lot of people listening to this would experience the same sort of issue. And, you know, personally, I've had many instances where I've had imposter syndrome because I've taken on a role which is challenging and aspects of it I've never done. How have you managed to regain that? Because, you know, obviously the business is very successful. You're successful in it. How did you manage to sort of navigate through that mire to get yourself back on track?
Yeah, it's funny. Coming back from maternity leave is one of those things where a lot of people find it really difficult to readjust, but also just the juggle itself. I've had a little bit of time since rejoining the workforce after having kids now, and I think it's almost and this is in no disrespect to mums that are just returning from leave now, but I think the worst is yet to come for them. I'm finding it more difficult now that the kids are a little bit older. They're social butterflies, so they've constantly got activities on. They're more involved in school. They're presenting in assemblies and all that sort of stuff. And I've forever got this guilt now that I can't make it to go see them present at assembly on a Friday afternoon because, oh, it could be today, end of month, and I'm trying to finalise some things. So I think the struggle and the juggle is a lot more difficult as the kids get older and you're trying to manage that guilt of whether you feel guilty for not being in their eyesight whilst they're presenting at assembly or the guilt that you have with your teammates because you can't be available on the phone or on an email for an hour of that Friday afternoon. So I think that's quite challenging in that respect. The other thing is, I think for the first return from mat leave, I was off work for about 8 months and I did cut my mat leave short because I was getting a little bit bored. Can I say that? But kids at that age don't really do much. But I'm the type of person, I need to keep my mind active, and sitting around waiting for a child to wake up isn't my thought of, I just can't relax. And the industry changes quite a lot. Relationships change a lot during that time off work. So to try and insert yourself back into your old role, back in your old networks, and try and keep up to speed with what's changed during that time can be quite challenging. And employers these days are doing a much better job at staying connected with staff whilst they're on leave than potentially what they did 10, 11 years ago now. So it's really great to see, and circling back to that whole diversity and inclusion piece, great to see a great big emphasis on those important people, women within the industry that are choosing to take some time off to start their family and be able to, one, stay on top of what's going on, feel connected within their team, but feel like they can slot back in when that time's right.
In fact, I was speaking to someone earlier today, and they spoke about coming back to work part-time and being at home part-time and how they felt they weren't doing either thing particularly well. Do you have a view in terms of which one works better for you?
I still don't think I particularly do it well full-time today. And it's always going to be a struggle because you're always going to feel like you're letting either side down. And it kind of feels wrong to say that because your family is more important than anything. Your job's your job. And it hasn't been until recently that I've started to try, I'll emphasize the word try, to work on my work-life balance because mine's really poor and I'm not shy to admit that. It got worse over COVID because we had nothing else to do other than work. And I got myself into really bad habits during that time. And I'm still trying to work my way back through that. But if there are people out there that are struggling with the part-time return to work, then have a discussion with your employer. Have some conversations with your colleagues. And hopefully there's some better understanding and awareness of what everyone's going through because everyone's different. And look, employers and colleagues should be really grateful that you're getting someone back part-time because that's an extra couple of days that you'd be trying to filter out work across the existing team. So I'm all for people returning to work in any capacity.
And someone who obviously knows your business, right? So it's not like you've got to retrain someone. There is a lot of value there. And I think the working from home phenomenon has probably changed that perception as well. Because in the good old days, it was like, well, if you're working from home, are you really? How can we know you're not mowing the lawn? How can we know you're not out having a coffee with your mates, right? So I think that dynamic has really altered, which I think is a real positive for us as an industry.
I was just going to say, it's amazing how far we've come on that working from home piece in such a short period of time. Like no more than 4 or 5 years ago, for us to have the sign-off to work from home from our employer needed executive-level sign-off, and that was just to get your hands on a laptop on the off chance that you might need it to work from home 1 or 2 days a week. And like, as I said, that's only 4 or 5 years ago, and now you're struggling to get people back into the office. There is such a demand for people to still work from home. But as long as there's accountability from both employer and employee, then and you got a good relationship between the two, then you'd hope that and trust that the job's getting done and they're not just mowing the lawns on a Thursday afternoon.
I think employers' hands have been forced, and I think a lot of employers have been pleasantly surprised with the output from their employees working from home, which has been absolutely brilliant. And don't get me wrong, I still think there is a need to be in the office because that's where you get that sort of informal mentoring. That's when you share information. That's where you establish relationships, which I think that part of it's going to be a challenge as we move forward. I wanted to ask you about whether you think you've personally changed as a result of your business exposure.
I'm not comfortable with particularly the exposure that I've had recently. Very much an introvert. So to be named on the hot list recently was fantastic achievement. I won't be shy around that. But I'm personally, I feel uncomfortable with that sort of limelight. But I guess in the family circles, I lap it up because I'm very humbled with the awards and accolades I've received recently. I'm still wearing many hats within the business, and it doesn't matter what role I'm employed to do. I'm still going to do the coffee run, or I'll still photocopy what needs to be photocopied. I'm just going to roll up my sleeves and get it done. So that's never going to change me. And I think it comes back to those values and work ethic that we spoke about earlier on that's just instilled, and I think you're just born with it.
It's intrinsically in your nature, isn't it, to do those sorts of things? Yeah, that's it. I wanted to ask you about your role. What are the things that you love about what you do?
It's a difficult one because you don't stop to reflect enough to start to think about what is it that gets me out of bed every morning? What is it that keeps bringing me back every day and enjoying it? And I think the one thing that sticks out is the relationships. Insurance is a really unique industry where we're so lucky to have relationships across many different levels, but it's something that we get to foster quite a lot, and it's very much an integral part of how the industry operates. I can't say that I worked in any other industry to say that it's different to that, but it's certainly something that holds it together. And like the recent conferences is a testament to the relationships that are out there. No matter what network you're a part of or what job you do, everyone has a common interest. And I can't believe that common interest is insurance. It's something that I really enjoy and that keeps me coming back every day. Like I look at my team and they all come from different walks of life and we all commonly do the same thing, but we love working together. So yeah, I think that's what it is. That was a really roundabout way of saying it.
No. It made perfect sense to me. And I guess the opposite end of that spectrum is, what's the most challenging part of your role?
Currently, it's just the many hats that I'm still wearing within the business, but that's the nature of running a small business and an underwriting agency. You've kind of got to roll up your sleeves, get it done, because there's always a job to be done. And at the end of the day, it's all about customer service. So can let something slide, but they've got to make sure that you pick up the phone. That's probably the most important part of all of that. But in terms of like the industry as a whole, my least favorite part of it would be the bad rap that insurance gets publicly through the media and even amongst family and friends. Every now and again, you tell people what you do. I work for an insurance company, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, is that what you do? And I think that we need to do a hell of a lot more as an industry to advocate for a lot of the good work that we are doing collectively to change that perception, because we are helping customers get their livelihoods back on track. A lot of the organizations are doing quite a lot of great work for charities, and a lot of that gets overlooked. So we do need to do a lot more to help change that perception, but it's going to be a long road.
Oh, it is. And I think what's actually happening is a lot of different groups are doing it sporadically, but there's no one push to make it happen. And, you know, declaring an interest, ANZIF is probably one that comes to mind that is actually trying to harness the collective power of the industry and do things like careers in insurance. So, and that's why I'm part of that, because I really love the fact that we're trying to do something on a more holistic scale. I want to take you back to that young 18, 19-year-old, please, Megan. And you're in a position now to give that young person a little bit of advice. What would you say to the 18-year-old Megan Duckworth?
I would say don't ignore the importance of professional development, whether it be formal, informal, tertiary or short courses. I mean, from an insurance perspective, you don't need a degree to get into our industry, which is a pretty unique situation to be in. But it's one of those things, the on-the-job training that you get, like there's people that have mountains of experience and the knowledge transfer within our industry is insane. And I think we need to be still doing a hell of a lot more of that before those, I'll say, more experienced professionals start to move towards retirement, but also seek out to the likes of an ANZIF to really bolster your training with some formal courses that they provide. The other piece of advice would just be to network. I can't stress how important networking is. I didn't do enough of it when I first started, and I think that was naturally because of the roles that I started in, but it's probably not until the last 5 years that I've really started to work on my networking, because it doesn't come naturally to me. But I can see a massive benefit to all of that in not only your job as you do day to day, but just in terms of what your career looks like down the track as well.
And just people to bounce ideas off. You know, one of the things about this insurance community is it doesn't matter who it is. If you pick up the phone, A, they will answer it, and B, they will help you in whatever question you've got. One final question before I let you go, Megan. So what is next for Megan Duckworth?
It's probably not the answer that people would assume, I would say. I think most people would say, oh, this is what I plan to do in terms of my next steps of my career and those sorts of things. But for me, the next steps is to work on my work-life balance. And I've started taking some proactive steps around that, particularly around turning notifications off on my phone for emails and instant messages, just to sort of dial down on the distractions day to day. But I need to start to spend more time with my kids. So I need to be a little bit selfish around taking some time off when it suits me, because they're just as important as me as an employee.
In fact, I remember someone saying to me when I was developing my career, and they said, just remember one thing, you know, it's great that you're climbing this corporate ladder, but no one ever lies on their deathbed going, gee, I wish I'd spend more time at the office.
No. And it's funny, because as I was saying that, I was starting to think, oh, this is a really big career limiting move by saying I need to work on my work-life balance, because any potential prospective employer is going, oh, well, she doesn't want to work. She wants to spend more time holidaying or something like that. But I think it's one of those things that employers need to really respect, that you're only going to have the human if they're looking after themselves, both physically and mentally. You're not going to get the best out of someone. And for a long period of time, particularly during COVID lockdowns, no one was getting the best out of me. So that's why I'm trying to, and the more I say it out loud and people hear this, they will hold me accountable to say, hey, you need to take a break. So it's on you, Mark, to tell me to switch off.
In fact, I'm 100% with you, because, you know, I've seen many, many cases of burnout because of the hours that people work. Not because of the employer commitment, but because of the employee commitment. They either fear failure or they are desperate for success. And both of those things drive mechanism of working way too long. And eventually their body or their mental health gives out. They are forced to take a break. I think it's a much smarter move in terms of what you're doing, is to say, okay, this is what I really need on my life side, and this is what I need on my work side. And sometimes you've got to put more into work, and sometimes you've got to put more into life. That's what keeps the person healthy. Hey, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Business Made Personal. I know you were a little nervous doing this podcast, so thank you for stepping out of your comfort zone and making it all happen. It's been just a delight speaking to you today.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. And I'm absolutely loving the podcast that you're doing. I've learned a lot about people that I've known for a very long time, including Dad and my sister, but also a lot of other industry stalwarts. So what you're doing is an absolute joy to listen to, and it's bringing a lot of life and personality into the industry. So well done, and thank you.
Thank you so much for lending us your ears. Please remember to click follow on your podcast app or subscribe at bmppodcast.com.au so we can give you a sneak peek of our next guest. Until next time, I'm Mark Silvera, and you've been listening to Business Made Personal.